Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Okay. Hi, my name is Brandon Sword. I'm a host on the Art Channel of New Book Network. I'm here with Anna Dako talking about her book, Dances with Sheep, on repairing the human nature condition and felt thinking and moving towards well-being. Anna, how's it going? How are you?
Lovely. Lovely to meet you, Brandon, today. And thank you very much for the invitation and Karen as well for this interview.
Great. So thinking about the title immediately, I couldn't help thinking about Dances with Wolves, Kevin Costner movie. And over the past several years in the U.S., there's been an increasing interest in Indigenous peoples and their relationships to the land as an alternative to prevailing like Western approaches. And in the United Kingdom, and especially in Scotland, where you're based, there's been this discussion around ancestral rights, like the right freedom to roam, and which suggests a different way of being with the land rather than one of exclusion and private ownership. So I'd be curious to hear about whether you see these as like influences upon like what you're doing and the ways that you're engaging with land in the book.
Yeah, wonderful question to start with. I definitely have been wondering for a long time to get to Scotland and then exercise my freedom as a thinker, as a mover, I suppose. Yeah.
I will confess that I only know about this because of a recent episode of, I think, The Daily, where there was like a deep, it was like on, they do these like long ones on Sunday. And there was one about like trespassers and like the Ramblers, the Rambler Association in the United Kingdom, yeah. Which was very interesting. And I knew very little about, so.
Yeah, well, yeah, I did wonder quite, unknowingly, let's say, until I got to Scotland and I did find out about, yeah, that being a law here, which is, I think, most beautiful law on this planet, which helped me jump a lot of fences. I did get chased away a few times. From many farmers' lands, I did.
But I was in trying. The U.S., it's like you'll maybe get shot, unfortunately. So
yeah, well, I'm always trying to be at least looking very welcoming. I think you know how we trespass just physically also already tells a lot about our attitudes and our motivations to move across, right, the land, whether it is owned or to a human being or to itself, right? Yeah, so it is a great question to start with in terms of how I've been getting here. You know, I do write a lot about this amazing time space when free movement, and of course I write from somatic experience perspective, how it generates a lot of intuitive hinges for us as well, and how it generates itself on those kind of creative moments or insights that for me often travel back and forth. So we definitely, you know, when we are submerged in movement experience, we definitely experience things that there is no wording for, right? There's just a sense of things or some sort of inner impression of things that are coming or connecting to anything that we have experienced before. So definitely me dancing with the sheep has been coming a long way. I grew up by the airport in Southeast Poland, which was a field airport, so only for private planes, and the management of that airport used to be transferred onto local farmers and local highlanders, really, who would come from higher grounds with herds of sheep, and that's how the grass airport has been managed, quite naturally. So I would wake up to the sound of sheep every day. So definitely that is something that has been with me for a long time. I've always been close to that sort of nature of I don't know, free roaming, free grazing that I think, sheep represent to us. And funny enough, you know, on different levels, I have, ever since I was growing up, in the middle of the town I come from, called Krosno, involved in a lot of dancing activities in the middle of the city. I used to be called a native girl for some reason. I think it was about the looks. I was wearing the two braids on the sides of my hair. That kind of carried on with me, I think, in terms of how I was developing, different sort of artistic sensitivities, and also of course, mindset in terms of how I was relating to the creative part of my work since I remember. So, graduating from college, I did take a major in cultural studies, which was American cultural studies. And my thesis graduating from college was on the image of Native Americans as depicted in films. So that was my first, let's say academic endeavor to portray. The prevailing attitudes towards the indigenous culture. Coming to the book, definitely, as I said, you know, somewhat moving to Scotland, which I have for my PhD studies, and of course the book comes from the period of 4 years of me writing the PhD. Definitely connected the strands and the threads of where things come from and how I was able to just all connect it together. And as I said, exercising that freedom of roaming like sheep do. Yeah, so thank you very much for that lovely, lovely, lovely question. Tapping into that more indigenous sense of belonging to the land is definitely very, very present in the work. This is how I was, I think challenging myself as a mover as well, who comes from quite standard academic educational background in dance and theater. And then at some point I really decided I need to move outdoors. I need to take my work outdoors. So coming to Scotland and being able to be welcomed by so much variety within the land, right? Because of course Scotland is well known for that. whether I was moving with the forest or, you know, within the valleys or hills, closer to brooks or closer to wetlands, or all sorts of amazing landscapes that are here. Then that was the constant invitation for me to challenge working with movement, which was kind of coming out or creeping out or roaming out of that, you know, anthropocentric framework for working with movement. I was really curious about how I can free the movement, also in somatic experience, from the hard floor of the studio, from, you know, encompassing presence of walls, and how I can start treating it and diving into it as a very, very open dialogue with whatever comes my way, whatever comes into the dialogue. And then that way, making movement a very active dialogue, it's on itself, and not treat it as any form of tool for creating anything, but being on its own, a very, very enriching and always nourishing dialogue. So that was my motivation. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, I think my years of working with camera and making dance-based films has taken me outdoors. Initially, funny enough, you know, we all work within constraints of technology. For me, working on my own budgets, creating dance films, meant I couldn't afford studios, I couldn't afford technical equipment. Whereas working outdoors has been always making it a little bit more easier. Not only in terms of writing, but also in terms of, you know, the scenography of whatever I was creating was becoming a creative process right away, without pre-ready ideas, pre-ready concepts, or pre-ready arrangements. So that was something that has always fascinated me, and that open dialogue with the living environment has always been pulling me towards the sheep. Yeah.
Cool. So as you came to this current practice by work you were doing in expressive therapies, but you've kind of alluded to this already, but before that, coming from a background in dance and theater, and yeah. I was thinking about the different ways that like what we might call somatics has a different approach to the relationship between the body and emotion than performance, perhaps, where the performer is like using the body, using movement to communicate emotion to an audience, whereas the somatician is using meant to try to get at something about the emotional life of the patient. So I was curious as to how you see this training impacting your approach to movement.
Yeah, again, you know, we all come with long stories, don't we? And of course, working within the framework of therapy and then creating my own way of working also with ecosomatic approach has been seeing many years of development. Where to start? You know, just like I mentioned already, that for me, being involved in theatrical productions and creative processes of many choreographers before, I was supporting many, many wonderful people within their creative processes, created for stage and performance and sorts of performative outputs. That definitely has been that journey from me being interested in the conceptual development of the work from the dramaturgical point of view, and connecting many threads that many creators, especially young ones that I've been supporting with, have not been aware of. Right, so this was my work and my input where I could create a deeper context to their work while they were creating something for stage, right? Making sure that the work is well attached to the context of how it is being created and how it's being communicated, of course, and for whom it's being communicated. So, making sure that we can connect all those strands. And then, of course, it has always been a beautiful learning process for us, me as a supporting dramaturg and for choreographers as well. So from that stage where I was longing to work more and more outdoors, I definitely, I was quite resistant to call whatever process I was always offering to others therapeutic. But I did get the sense of that in many instances. And then, of course, when I joined UCLan, program on somatic dance and somatic well-being program MA, I was really able to dive into that therapeutic realm in the most beautiful way because it was my own process. So in that way, of course, going through a lot of stages of connecting more conceptual work, which I've gone through before, both philosophical and let's say connected to cultural theory and then language theory and theater theory, to more experiential dimensions of movement, and then going through my own process of how the creative process itself is naturally healing and offers so many supportive pathways. So, you know, discovering that side, of course, it movement is always on that edge of being an amazing phenomenon to watch, to participate in, to even sit with as a witness. You know, we all have different ways of participating in movement, not only as a mover, but also as an observant or a very... or witness, but then, you know, the experience in the creative process through those 2 years spent in Preston for me, you know, opened the different channel of creative process, which then of course was channeled through my own experience first, and then from there I started offering it to others under the umbrella of therapeutic work. As I said, I was resistant to that quite a lot because you know, as a creator, you don't think about the therapeutic aspects of the work. Of course, they are always there, but you don't feel like you own them, right? You don't feel like this is something on offer. You just appreciate that aspect of the work. So kind of you have to go a little bit around the corner and experience it firsthand through. And I did have the need to experience it firsthand because my health was also quite suffering at the moment where I was doing the somatic movement and dance program in MA. Then it's like a firsthand learning experience, of course, and this is the only way that we can then open that process to others when we understand it firsthand as well. Mm-hmm. Brendan, I'm not sure I'm going the right direction with where your question was, but if you can rephrase it for me, that would be lovely. Or maybe you hooked it on a
there, no, there's no direction. I was just kind of thinking about I don't know, we might call them like the lines of causation or something. Mm-hmm. And we can think about something like in theater or like physical theater where it's like I am angry and that causes me to do something with my body, or I'm sad, and that causes me to do something with my body.
You did ask me about emotions. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. As or you think I don't know if you do like yoga or like stuff like that, but you do like yoga, and there's this interesting thing that happens sometimes where in the middle of class someone will start like laughing or like crying or these things where it's like, rather than it being like I'm having this emotion and it's causing me to move, it's like I am moving and that's like causing an emotion in me. So it's like when we were chatting before, I was talking a little bit about these like clown classes that I was taking during COVID, and we would do these like it was really interesting because it's like a very like physical and like in-person form. So we're trying to figure out how to like do that via Zoom and stuff. And it's this exercise that we would do that I think about a lot, where it's like, you look around the space that you're in, you look for an object that gives you a feeling, and then you notice what your body does. And then, so we would do that, and then we would come back and we would be like, okay, we wouldn't say anything about the object. We would just be like, okay, so I fidgeted my fingers, breathed in, and like raised my shoulders. And then we'd be like, okay. And then we all, and like, how does that make me feel? I'm really interested in, you know, how all of that works, how we get from one to the other, how one influences the other.
Yeah, you definitely make me think about 10 things at the same time. I'm not sure what your experience is with somatic approach working with movement, because there are so many different ways and so many different schools, and I definitely do yoga, and I am a mover and a former athlete, and you know, I always do something physically. I cannot sit still for long. But with somatic experience, you know, for me, it definitely, you know, I definitely describe the stages that have developed in my practice as some sort of reliable framework to working with movement. Relating to the environment you are with, just like you're saying, relating to an object or letting it evoke some sort of emotion and then gliding on that. I'm thinking first, I would love to let you know, you know, I definitely am one of those practitioners that, you know, because of my background, I am always interested in how movement can function on all those many layers, right? And all those many functions. At the same time, I'm always so caring for freeing it from frameworks of of delivery, because, you know, as a performer, It takes a lot of depth and a lot of artistry, of course, to get as easy as you can, as flowful as you can, to the level where you experience both. You can dive into the freedom of your artistic creativity on stage. At the same time, of course, you are performing. You know the form. You know the agreed parameters and concepts that the play or the performance is following. And it's somewhat similar to how I describe, you know, how we dwell and understand the therapeutic side of working with movement, because that freedom of flying between the free flow and the form, yeah, is always there. And it comes through practice and, of course, through pre-agreed, context of how you dive into the movement or performative experience that you can play with. So that flexibility is, I think, the most important part of how you work with movement or delivery, whether you are you know, into a bit more of a performative end of the movement, or a bit more therapeutic part of it, or a bit more completely open and improvised type of movement. You know, how you interact with the emotional part of it, for me, the way I have been working through the somatic experience, and of course I developed it into the ecosomatic experience, at the same time I keep reminding everybody that even if you are in an enclosed space, in a studio or in a theater, this is also a natural environment, right? This is an environment created by human beings. And it's nowhere separate from the natural world. It is made of wood, it is made of metal, it is made of whatever human hands got hand of, right? So we can work with any environment through the ecosomatic perspective. But definitely, you know, transitioning between how our embodied apparatus is open to dialogue, right? And how it is letting us dive into what I call a little bit more contemplative part of movement experience. This is the contemplative part that, you know, that the somatic practitioners would normally invite you to, which is working on forms of looking inwards, looking inside, and then perhaps also, you know, relaxing a little bit more. How you engage in movement, meaning making the space secure enough for you to free flow and be safe, so you can dive in and experience all the movement that is happening on the inside of the body, right? and then that dialogue between the inner and the outer world always flows through your through your emotional middle body, let's say, right? Because this is where your heart reacts, and heart is a muscle. This is where your musculature reacts. This is where all the movement realizations are happening, right? On that, what I call the mesodermic part of movement engagement. So this is this is where our circuitry system and more of a tissue, the living tissue related aliveness of our body is communicating and dialoguing with your experience, because of course the emotion is always somewhere in between the inner body and the outer body, right? Mm-hmm. So flying through that inner and outer world of relation is definitely where we learn a lot. Yeah, this is where we experience also the dimensionality of what the meaning, whatever we are engaged with at the moment, is doing to us, whether it is just within the delivery realm, whether it moves into some sort of deeper realms where we kind of give in and let it go and let it develop. And then, of course, depending on whatever environment you are working with, mm-hmm, whether it is also something that you are allowing yourself to respond to, or whether you are only on that productive level of working with movement. Yeah, so just coming back to your question, you know, working within the performative, and we've gone through so many questions, you know, also through educational stages, asking ourselves questions, what is dance, right? Because this, I think, you know, the journey towards operating more with language and using movement instead of dance, it's always been that dialogue, which corresponds to your question, I suppose, because of course we are, as performers, we have been using the word dance way more, because this is the performative side of working with movement. And then of course movement itself kind of envisages that deeper freedom.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So I was also thinking about like dualisms, and you've been talking about inner and outer, and you know, this term felt thinking that you use in the subtitle of the book. And I'm interested in like how you think about these kinds of Cartesian like dualisms between like the mind and the body. It's like whether they're necessary evils that we have to navigate. They're like dangerous illusions to be overcome. I'm thinking of different religious practices, especially Eastern religions. We think about like Buddhism or something, and that and like meditation as this way of like getting rid of the body, perhaps in like there's like a crude understanding of it as in that way. But there's also these things like there's like walking meditations and like various forms of like tantra where it's like the body is like, it's not like an enemy that you have to get rid of, but is like a tool that we're using to help the mind or to like get to a certain state of mind. So that when you were talking about like contemplation, it was kind of bringing some of that up for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is of course a huge conversation to be had. Well, if you go to the website where I share about my practice and of course the continuations of the work on felt thinking, which is called dunamisomatics.com, you will see that I do and have been developing after the book has been written in 2019, because it took a lot of time to publish. it's a little bit of a revisiting for me today, all the work. But yeah, since 2020, I have moved on to walking quite a lot. So, and I also been one of the first people who have been offering the formats of therapy in terms of outdoor walks. So I simply take people for walks as a therapeutic session, and this is when all our experiences of dialoguing and interacting and looking inside our experiences and dialoguing happens. So that's definitely the way of working contemplatively with movement. Also, repetitiveness of movement puts our body at that beautiful state where your mind also opens to very, very, very different frequencies of how you can access your experiences and how you can navigate through different interpretations of that as well. Yeah, definitely our mind, this is something that I've been experiencing and discovering within myself for years, that whatever comes as our response, verbalized response, is so influenced by how we are physically, how we sit, how we even dress, where we are. This is our mind is continuously our conscious mind, of course, is continuously responsive to how our body feels, right? So today I'm also, trying to sit as comfortably as I can. And I usually have the tendency to sit as close to the ground as I can, because I know that this is where I can feel, I can speak for myself. When I alleviate myself or detach myself or in any form restrict myself, I right away feel that, whatever comes or becomes verbalized is kind of like a limited version of what I am actually experiencing, just because the mind is limited as well. Coming back to your question of felt thinking, the contemplative part of that was definitely always building on, and of course I've gone through a lot of studying of body mind theories, and in my practice, I think long years already, I've personally refuse to use the word body because, you know, being aware of how the word is being used and misused and the connotations prescribed to body has not been, you know, sitting well with what I meant by our physical self, right? So this is when the word soma also comes in. And of course, you can refer to a lot of work of other somatic pioneers of etymology of the word soma. But, you know, understanding body as living body, not as objectified, you know, physical, format of ourselves is definitely what the work is about and what the somatic work brings into contemplative thinking, right? Into the philosophical thinking. Mm-hmm. So thinking through the body and with the body has always felt a natural way for me, right? That is why I think my journey has always been that direction from what I had to go as conceptual, quite, you know, rigorous theoretical studies in philosophy and cultural and theater theory to more embodied ways of being and knowing. And of course, creative ways of knowings is also something I've written about before, about the epistemological ways of knowing through artistic process. And then with Feld thinking and my PhD, this was movement for me even further away from what we understand as knowing, what we understand as cognitive thinking, and looking for ways how our embodied thinking can become better understood and better comprehended as the most natural way of thinking, right? And of course, connecting body mind in the historical dualisms that we've been experiencing throughout the history of philosophy. Definitely, you know, me embarking on the PhD, of course, when you jump into the book, you will see how much of the theoretical grounding I'm also trying to find a good balance to connecting the standard schools of philosophy, whether it's existentialism or process philosophy and phenomenology, how much all of those schools of thoughts are definitely seeing ways of being balanced through more updated ways of embodied thinking through more updated ways of thinking through phenomenological thinking as well. And of course, the pioneers in somatic work. It definitely also feels a little bit like a conversation between the masculine and feminine. Of course, looking at the history of philosophy, we know where the body-mind dualisms are coming from, so I'm not going to be jumping into that debate. In terms of Feld thinking, please clue me on how would you like me to dive into that? What interests you? Whether you would like me to speak a little bit more about Feld thinking as a methodology of working with movement, or any aspects of, again, working through the landscape that got me to describing and pursuing that research as fully practice-based, experiential project.
Yeah, I don't know if I had anything especially deep to say about Feld thinking. I just I thought of it as just like this sort of internal contradiction or like tension of it. Like there's something I've taught undergraduates a lot over the past few years, and there's this thing I've noticed where students will say, I feel like in relation to something about a text, and as opposed to I think that that's interesting insofar as if you're having a feeling about a text, it's like a private experience, and I can't say you're not having a feeling, or this is the wrong feeling, as opposed to thoughts, which are logical. And when someone is having a thought, I can disagree with a thought, or I can think that someone's thinking is wrong or misguided, but I can't, it's harder to do that with feelings. So there's a sort of, I don't know if I would call it like publicness, but an implied other of thinking that is different than feeling. I don't know, maybe I'm putting too much in these terms.
Yeah, I mean, you know, those terms are big, of course. They correlate with specific concepts of, schools of thoughts and how logic has been also used to you know, pursue philosophical reasoning. For me, you know, felt thinking definitely embraces how... I told you the felt thinking definitely is an endeavor at human nature and understanding human nature, and not only understanding it but comprehending it from the first hand experiential perspective, right? So this is when the processes of free movement and exploring concept of self and other, right, come into play. And this is where the processes of conscious and subconscious thinking and feeling both, because, of course, we know the Cartesian, I think, but definitely, you know, if you are not able to feel, or if your physical brain is not functioning, you are not able to think, right? So, you know, his ways of being and me studying human condition through more embodied perspective is definitely, you know, opening that ways of how we can understand ourselves as always that fluid entity, right, of being self and other at the same time, being conscious and functioning of subconscious levels at the same time. Because, of course, if you dive into free movement, you can never logically tell what is happening, right? And why you are moving the way you are moving, and why the imagery and the sensations and the orientations in time and space is happening to you. A lot of those experiences are just happening because you are here and now, and all that historicity of why you are being you and how you got to that point are also present with you at the same time, right? At the same time you are moving, meaning every movement is an extension into the future realm, right? Which you do not know, right? Because again, you do not know why you are moving the way you are moving. You are not moving intentionally. You are not moving representatively. You are not moving as a gesture. You are not moving to perform a specific action. You are working with free movement experience as an open dialogue, right? So then in that way, there's a lot of unknown. And you have to agree to all that unknown, yeah, to be able to dive into that experience and let the experience take you forward. Yeah. So in that way, as I said, you know, it's a very, very open ground of how you relate to yourself. And felt thinking is presented by me in the book as a methodology of way of getting to know ourselves. Yeah. And of course, you know, that self-inquiry as a way to self-knowing, but also as a way of understanding how you can help yourself, how we can help your own condition not only of being human, of course, but you can work with different related to your own sense of well-being aspects, how those aspects are communicating to you through movement, yes, because they are very active within your body and your sensing. So having that inner dialogue with your with yourself at the same time in relation to where you are, how you are, why you are, and who you are in that movement is a very, very multidimensional dialogue that, yeah, that definitely functions as that deep contemplation time for yourself. Yeah, and as I said, it's always a learning process and it's always a creative process, and it always is a form, if you want to really dive into it for the sake of being guided as well, right? This is a process where you learn how much of empathy and how much of care is also present in movement. Yeah, because movement is, as I write, is always relational as well. You always move towards something and you always move away from something. Just like you said, you are reacting to object in space or whatever is around you, right? So your emotional setup is that inner guidance that is like a glue between your sensations and between your deeper insides. Yeah.
Well, those were my questions. Do you have anything else you wanted to tell us or that you wanted to cover?
Well, as I said, you know, our writing felt thinking definitely comes as a beautiful process, which something that we tapped onto as an project that was connecting my personal experience as a mover, which I also opened up to the experiences of other movers that I invited onto the project, and also it being an academic study, right? So then it functions on both of those levels, of the experiential and on the conceptual. So I'm hoping it really creates that sort of a bridge where anybody can find a bit of a connection there and there. It definitely presents a lot of complexity of experience and a lot of ways that we can think about us, ourselves, or getting to know ourselves as human beings, as individual beings, through many levels of what I call relatedness. Yeah. And how us being in constant relation with both the inner sensing, the physical experiences of ourselves, the historicity of our experiences of being self, can then be opened to being very, very present as co-creators of who we are in a wider context of being in the world, right? And with the world. I think I've been emphasizing the withness quite a lot throughout the book as well, because it is about creating with. Yeah. And again, realizing that whoever we are, as a kind or as individuals, is always also a co-creative process. We are not here as separate human beings or a separate kind or a separate species, but we are continuously co-creating self and other. Yeah. And that otherness is definitely also something we are discovering through the somatic process while we are looking within, that otherness and that, you know, connection to more primal sense of self is always within us once we give it an occasion to be tapped to through free flow movement and through the experiences of life. Because I also don't talk about physical movement all the time, because for me, moving through life is also movement, right? The movement of our thoughts is also working with movement. So it's not only about the physical movement, but it's about comprehending that creative ontology of life itself as creative movement. Yeah.
Okay. Well, on that note, maybe we'll hear a bit from our mutual friend, Karen.
Yeah. Karen has been busy.
Hello, and many thanks for having us all here today. My name is Corin Little, and I'm the organizer of Out of Sight. I just want to make sure you all can hear me. Are you hearing me?
Fine. Mm-hmm. Super.
That's great. Okay, yes, you can hear me. So, yeah, it was really fascinating what Anna was talking about in terms of the neurological connections of embodied practice and what happens in this relational process when we're working with performance actions. People use different terminology from different geographical disciplines. As performance artists, we're interested in this intuitive process that occurs through the creative development of a work. And specifically, Flow, Embody, and Sight is thinking about this relational practice, this intuitive process, referring to what Anna was saying as the free flow that occurs through the process of making an action in outdoor contexts. So at Flow, Embody, and Sight, I think it might be the only symposium dedicated to public performance art practice. We host workshops, practice-based workshops, where people can engage with world-renowned practitioners. This year, we're supporting Yarina Shomska to give in-person workshops in Chicago. And we're supporting Odana Rimalada from Lagos, Nigeria, to fly to Rotterdam to give in-person workshops there, along with two local artists, Ayako Kato and Yvette Tiwan, who's from The Hague. And her workshop is talking about these inner and outer processes that Anna was referring to. So there's a lot of crossover and connection in the thinking that is happening at Flow. And in addition, so people can register for an Ebb and Flow registration, which gives you access to the workshops. And then there's also a series of presentations by artists, scholars and curators, and we are thrilled that Anna Dacko is going to be presenting Felt Thinking as part of the Flow this year. And to really expand the dialogue about this practice and ways of working in public spaces. As you notice, I have a Scottish accent, and so this idea of free access and wild being, having access to the countryside, to the landscape, is a really important part of the work that we are doing. And you can register for a steady stream, which just gives you access to the presentations. And we are thrilled to be partnering with three academic institutions this year. Ohio University has been partnering with us for the last 3 years with the School of Art and Design. And we're excited to partner with Le Parc Research Center at Concordia University in Montreal, Canada, and the University of Lincoln in the UK. And we're also thrilled to be partnering with Intellect Books for a third year, which and we're going to be giving attendees a 30% discount on the performance art monologue. And we have lots of, and our major partner for Flow is Worm, based in Rotterdam, that are the co-organizers of this project this year. So very much excited about that. And if you can't attend the in-person symposium, the people participating in the workshops will be opting in to create live performances in their public spaces from around the globe in week three. So you can tune in via Experimental Sound Studio in Chicago to see the live broadcasts. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening to us. My name is Corinne Little, and I'm the organizer of Out of Sight Chicago. So thank you so much.
And I'm Brandon Sword with New Books Network. Thank you all for being here.